everyone, and welcome to another edition of Retail Gazette's Unpacked podcast. I'm your host, Kieran Howells. Today, I have the incredible pleasure of speaking to the wonderful Isabella Camuda of Elavon. She is a payments expert, the likes of which have never been seen. She has spent over 20 years within Elavon, working on various different aspects of the company's amazing technology. She is the ultimate go-to resource on all things payment. I'm really, really looking forward to this conversation. I know I'm going to learn so much, and you are too. So let's go ahead and kick off with our conversation.
My name is Isa Camuda. I am a senior product manager in Elavon. I work within Platform EU product area in our product organization. I've been with Elavon for 21 years this year. I've worked across many departments, started in operations, and moved to technology for a little while as part of software assurance testing group that I was part of. And I think around 7 years ago, I started my journey in the product organization, which is an interesting area to be in because it bridges the business, so sometimes the operations and the technology world within the company. We're trying to translate business requirements into requirements for solutions that our technology teams then build. We work very closely with our technology partners, which creates nice units within which product and technology work together to deliver new features, new solutions. So certainly, I have been enjoying that part. I am mostly in the back end, if you will, of the processing world within core acquiring, making sure that transactions that arrive from our customers get speedily processed to make sure that they're cleared to the schemes so that the consumers can see these transactions posted. Within my remit, I also look after money movement in the grander meaning of the word. So funding our customers through the various banking partners. And so mostly on the back end, somehow removed from retail, but at the same time, making sure that our customers do see their funds and that their customers, so our consumers, see the transactions in their accounts in a timely manner.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being here with me today. So you are very much a perfect expert to be delving into the complexities of payments, having this really interesting view and having spent quite a lot of time within the company. Let me ask you first and foremost then, what's something that you wish more retail leaders understood about the complexities involved in keeping payments both secure whilst also seamless?
Yeah, I think the seamless aspect is, while we don't want anyone to notice any interruptions or any friction, right? It is one that is hard to establish and maintain. We take great pride in the resiliency of our applications. Our authorization host on a regular basis maintains a 95.99% approval rate with an overall 99.99% SLA, but that takes a lot of work, be it server upgrades, hardware work, or software sometimes, that also needs to be tweaked to make sure that there are no lags. Our clearing platform readies 5 million Visa transactions within a 45-minute window between receiving the transaction to having it formatted and ready to go to Visa for further processing. There is a lot of technology resiliency exercises and development that goes into that. The good news is, once you partner with Elavon, you get to avail of these resilient solutions and these SLAs. There is also the aspect of card brand regulation and compliance, and not just card brand regulation and compliance. Keeping payments secure is often part of great scrutiny from the card schemes. We work with them to make sure that any of their mandates in general, and especially the ones that deal with security, are adhered to. And they often translate to quite complex work that we then need to complete. If we think about a transaction, there are so many fields that need to be populated the exact right way in order for that transaction to flow correctly, whether it's the authorization flow or the clearing flow with the scheme. And these data fields get enhanced and new fields get introduced. And that type of work is what our regulation and compliance teams then need to deal with to make sure that we stay on top of what's required from a scheme perspective. So the regulation and compliance and the resiliency angle, I guess, are the two that I would like to highlight. And a tremendous amount of work goes into both of these.
Yeah, it really sounds like it. I mean, that amount of transactions is astronomical. And I guess that from the perspective of people who aren't experts in this area, very much like myself, it's just that partnering with the right organization means that you don't have to worry about all of those complexities in the back end because someone else is worrying about them for you, I guess.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, I've been in the organization for a while. I've worked with these teams, but I myself am still so impressed with some of these statistics, right? I think one that I want to quote because I'm just, impressed by it is our servers, the ones that cater for authorization traffic, they've been benchmark tested to cater for 1,500 transactions per second. We average 676 authorizations per second. It's an insane amount of traffic, and it flows. So these are good numbers, impressive numbers.
Incredible, incredible. So from an insider perspective, I'm interested to know, where in the payments chain do you see the most innovation happening right now? Because that, again, that number of payments per second is astronomical. It must take an awful lot to keep that flowing, you know, to keep those happening securely. What are those real innovations happening? And why are these areas so critical to solving the challenges that retailers have today?
Yes. So one of the things is obviously the approval rate. We may have a 99.99% SLA, but it's the approval rate that's going to matter to our customers, right? So it's working in that space, that upfront part of the journey as the transaction is being received. Can we stand over authorizing that transaction? And that's where a lot of innovation is happening right now. We want to make sure that fraudulent transactions are detected, right? So that our customers are not exposed to fraud, that they're not exposed to chargebacks. We are investing in modern solutions around fraud detection to make sure that we leverage newest technology to be as fast in how we learn about these transactions. Are the fraudsters are coming up with new ways to trick us, right? Mm. There's a lot of work going into making sure that consumers have a better experience in terms of friction, right? We don't need abandonment at the card because of a lag that's happening when the transaction is being processed. So these are some of the areas where most of the attention is being put in right now. Things like tokenization, whereby a token gets generated to be exchanged instead of the card number, right? So the card number is not part of the message anymore. It's a token. And I can have a token against my phone. I can have a token against my card. It's still me. It's a dynamic value that's being exchanged, but I'm still the consumer, that one person leveraging these multiple channels and multiple devices to make purchases. It is important because in the current world, cash is less and less being used, and we need to be able to keep up with what's happening in payments.
So the idea with tokenization is that presumably if those details aren't the things being utilized to actually approve the transaction, those details are safer. Is that the idea behind the concept of tokenization?
Absolutely, yes. The PAN does not get exchanged. It's a secure value that replaces the PAN that still has the same, I guess, power to move money, right? But it's way more secure, yes.
Obviously, you're right that as the solutions develop and become more complex, so do the threats. So I'm interested in how you have seen those threats evolve and how things like tokenization are drawing the power from bad actors who are looking to get into these systems and take money from clients' cards or grab their details and all of that, you know, really fundamental stuff, which is essential in keeping us safe.
Yes, so tokenization is a great example of making transactions more secure if we think about data breaches, right, and customer data being stolen. If it's not being held against the transaction at any point of the journey because it's been tokenized and the value being exchanged is a token instead of a PAN, you have to have the key to decrypt that transaction, right? That token can only be decrypted using the right key, and you can't get hold of the key, which makes it extra secure. In other terms, I guess, how we deal with fraud detection upfront is also evolving, right? We're going into the space of AI and machine learning to analyze more data and create more intelligent models versus what in the past would have been based against a set of very rigid rules that very quickly, in fairness, could have been bent and the transaction no longer looks fraudulent, where it in fact is. With machine learning, we can be on top of these trends.
And you mentioned there some very modern technology, one of the technologies of our time, which is, you know, machine learning, AI. We also hear terms like biometrics thrown around an awful lot. But can you tell us a bit more about how these evolving technologies are actually being used inside Elavon?
Yes, so they are being leveraged across multiple areas of our organization, both for solutions that we're working on and internally to make ourselves more efficient, right? So I already mentioned the use of AI and machine learning when it comes to fraud solutions. We are also leveraging biometrics as part of a pilot that we've been doing with digital onboarding. So even before the account is open, right, you need to go through a journey of getting your account set up within Elavon. There is an option to leverage IDPal, an app that will then, again, through the use of biometrics, obtain a digital signature, which makes it more streamlined during the onboarding process. We are leveraging things like GitHub Copilot within our technology teams to make our code more efficient, to make our testing more efficient. You know, if you think about it, every solution that we work on needs to be thoroughly tested. The better the testing, the better the options to automate testing, the shorter time to market, right? The more efficient we're becoming. A lot of our test automation tools are leveraging AI to make it more robust, more thorough, and faster. So these are some of the use cases. I myself am now a big fan of Copilot. It helps with the mundane, you know, note-taking, organization of emails, sometimes even, you know, making sure that the tone of the email gets improved by using that. They're simple things, but they do add to the efficiency of us also.
Absolutely. It's little and often, isn't it? You know, those things add up and make a really big difference. I'm wondering, obviously, you work with some of Europe's biggest retailers, and that's, you know, that's an impressive portfolio that the company has. Are there any patterns or gaps that you consistently see, even among these kind of large businesses, when it comes to upgrading their payment systems and keeping them on the cutting edge?
You know, I think busyness is one of the patterns that we see. Everyone has a roadmap that they're working with, and everyone has a number of priorities that they're trying to fulfill, right? So there may be an instance, and it does often happen, that while upgrading your payment system is necessary, it may not be the top priority. There are other things in your roadmap that you need to fulfill first, whether, maybe they're tactical, maybe they're quick wins, and they just need to get your attention first. So that busyness is something that we often experience. We're trying to align with partners or with businesses, right? We're trying to allocate a time window to complete a certain piece of work. And it's not just one roadmap that we're dealing with, i.e. Elevon's roadmap, right? It's the partner's roadmap. And on top of that, it's the customer's roadmap. If it transpires that there is work that needs to be done by the customer themselves. So not an easy feat to align three roadmaps when everybody is busy, but we absolutely make do. Then there's also the cost that's involved in that, right? I know we talk about budget myths, but there are also some budget truths, right? Every upgrade goes with an expense that needs to be planned for. So it does sometimes happen that certain upgrades, especially the ones that are maybe, not value driving, but let's say compliance driven, they're on the back burner a little bit, right? Because there are value driving initiatives or efforts that need to happen first before we get down to the compliance ones. And sometimes it takes a hard deadline to make things happen. And there's aspect of resources that need to be allocated, and the aspect of potential service disruption. Right. Mm-hmm. We make a change, and what if it comes with service disruption, or what if the service disruption is part of the effort that while implementing something needs to be disrupted? But having said all that, a lot of the solutions that we offer, we do the heavy lifting. TRA, for example, that solution, transaction risk analysis, it's one of our key solutions that we offer to customers to increase authorization rates. That took a bit of time to build internally. It wasn't a tremendous amount of time, but there was an effort that had to be put into that upfront. But now that we have that solution, onboarding new customers and getting them using TRA is almost down to a configuration task, right? You put the effort ahead and you then get to leverage it time and time again through simple configuration tasks that allow you to plug into that particular solution or functionality.
Yeah. So it comes back again to the idea that actually all of the heavy lifting is being done your end, which means that actually to have some really sharp and upgraded security in your payments process, you can just come along and plug it in, and as a retailer, it will just work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. To a great extent. Now, there are solutions that will require the customer or the partner to reciprocate, right? There are things that need to then change, for example, on the incoming message, as we call it. And so they need to be captured upfront. But having said that, a tremendous amount of the heavy lifting is done by us to make it as seamless for our customers to then be able to leverage these solutions or functionalities as possible.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's your customers, and then there's your customers' customers.
And, oh, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And the customer journey and the payments role within that has only evolved. It's more complex now than ever before. It's more nuanced now than ever before. You can be in a store, you can be buying something online whilst holding a product that you're about to take to a checkout. You could be using buy now, pay later options. The world of payments is just so vast and deeply interconnected as well. So what technical challenge do you think is hardest to solve across the spectrum of those channels?
Yes, it is exactly that. It is that omnicommerce capability that we're all striving for. And it is then really important for the customer to have one view of all the channels that they're operating in, right? Me as a consumer, on the other hand, I also want that, what a colleague of mine called continuity of identity, right? Mm-hmm. Me purchasing something online and speaking from personal experience, I will only ever opt to purchase something if there is an option to return it in store. I'm not big into returns via post and all of that, right? So it is important to me that if I do need to return an item, that that part of the process is also as frictionless as possible. I don't want to spend an awful lot of time standing there with the item trying to get my refund. And we have seen, I've experienced instances where all it took was me handing in the item, providing the order number. I didn't even have to present my card that I used for purchase to get the refund sent to the right account that was used. And that's clearly a case where the retailer has insight into these different channels. The transaction is connected. I am the customer that they can see in their system and process the transaction via a different channel without increasing friction on my end. So that's one definitely. And as you said, it is constantly evolving. So one of the technical challenges is staying on top of that evolution. There are so many payment options and preferences. Again, speaking from personal experience, my son does not want to carry anything else with him but his phone. Mm-hmm. That will serve all the purposes in his life, right? He does his payments with his phone. I'm, on the other hand, still quite attached to the plastic, as in to the physical card, right? I won't shy away from using the phone, but I don't mind using the card. But I look at my mother's generation, and she is so attached to cash still. She's almost suspicious of every time she needs to pay with the card. But these are three different consumers with three different habits, and these habits need to be accounted for within one retailer, right? It's that, the evolution and the fact that we have so many preferences. The one thing that we all like is seeing our transactions approved when we attempt to buy something, right? So, again, working around that space of increasing improved authorization while making sure that the transactions are solid and not fraudulent, to make sure that these instances of fraud and chargebacks are reduced. So making the data security layer as seamless as possible. That's one from a technology perspective that we absolutely need to constantly iterate on.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you say there, because it's so true that there's a generational divide in how people like to pay. There is even just a kind of a technological divide as well, where for some people, you can leave your house with your phone and it has everything you could possibly need to make purchases or do whatever you need to do. One of the other things that's really interesting at the moment is emerging payment methods, like, for example, account to account, digital wallets, and even crypto, although I've got to admit that personally I have absolutely no idea how one would pay with crypto, but it is something that people do want to do. So are these adding to the risks of the landscape, or actually are they helping to simplify it a bit?
We are actually big believers in the, maybe not simplification, but they help diversify it, right? And mm-hmm. we want to be able to embrace these payment methods to make sure that our customers, again, are able to accept these types of payments based on consumer preference. The big thing that we need to remember is, since we operate on a pan-European basis, there are so many local markets that we are in. If we take Poland, for example, I'm originally from Poland. I visit often. And BLIK is a local payment method that really and truly has taken over card payments in Poland. Mm-hmm. If you're not paying with Blik, then I don't know, there's something wrong with you. I don't pay with Blik because you have to have an account in a Polish bank. But domestically, it's incredible how popular it is. I see Blik everywhere. Sometimes I've seen instances where online payment in Poland, there was no option to pay with card. It right. was just account-to-account payment methods and Blik that were listed as options. They're fast, they're reliable. A lot of people like them. And so it would be foolish not to embrace them since we have a presence in the Polish market. Belgium, for example, and the Netherlands, they're big into local payment methods. Belgium famously has their local scheme called Bankcontact that I think, I can't remember the exact number, but it's easily something like 92% of domestic traffic in Belgium is Bankcontact. If we want to be fair to our customers in Belgium, we need to support Bankcontact, which is exactly what we did. We embarked on a project to start supporting it, and we now have it ready to go. Payconyx and Ideal, I think, is the local payment method in the Netherlands, are again examples of payment methods that are embraced in various markets. So if we want to have a robust solution, we have to accommodate for these local payment methods. So in my mind, it is helping to simplify the market in the sense that our customers are then able to react to whatever the payment that's being presented, be it a card or a local payment method via a QR code or an app, whatever it may be.
Also, from your perspective, just kind of hopping back to your perspective, Elavon is of course known for staying ahead of regulation like PSD2, for example. I'm very interested to hear how the company balances building products that meet compliance standards while still pushing innovation forward. That must be a very hard tightrope because nothing, you know, is more concerning to people than the safety and security of their payments. However, of course, the space does need to evolve and adapt as new capabilities and technologies, you know, become available. So, yeah, how do you get that balance right?
So first and foremost, absolutely, regulation and compliance is our bread and butter. We are actually right now in the cycle of October regulatory release, which is Visa and MasterCard and the other schemes twice a year. They have a number of mandates that need to be fulfilled. So we're actively working through that to make sure that by the right date, we have all the mandates that have been shared with us by the schemes ready to go. In general, I think we come from a good space of one, having low risk appetite. We're conservative sometimes in the risks we take, but absolutely for the right reasons, because we are so heavily regulated. It's not just schemes, right? There's the European Union has regulations that we need to adhere to. Payment schemes have regulations that we need to adhere to. So that lens of reg and compliance is built in every time we look at something new, right? So we will be cautious, but we will not forgo being part of the newer technologies. But I guess we have that right angle on just because we have that experience of thriving in a highly regulated environment.
Yeah, I guess it kind of comes naturally when in the payment space to have to balance and manage those two things.
It does. Now, I will admit there are times where you need to balance it to the extent that there could be something big coming from the scheme that has to be done by a mandated date. And then the roadmap needs to make room for that, right? So sometimes mm-hmm. there are decisions that we need to make and push for the regulatory work to be completed ahead of maybe some other feature that we'd like to release to the market. There are some situations where it just needs to go towards the regulatory item. But these decisions are very tactical, right? And it's Just because something is compliance or regulatory doesn't mean that it always takes priority, but sometimes it has to, is really the point I'm trying to make. So we make these decisions quite consciously as to which ones we absolutely have to pursue, and is there anything that needs to wait a little bit because of this number one priority that came from a regulatory and compliance area.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So I'm really sorry to say we're very nearly out of time, but I am going to squeeze in one more question for you. So I want to ask, for retail leaders listening today who want to strengthen the partnership between their business and their payment provider, what's one thing they could do to start that conversation better?
You know, we're very big now about feedback loop, even in our development cycle, right? We like to deliver fast, learn from what we've delivered, and be able to react to it. So feedback loop is now a thing that's always strong on my mind. Provide us with feedback. Be connected with us to tell us what you like, what you dislike. There are so many existing channels that can be leveraged for existing customers, right? For new customers, our website has a vast amount of information that are really interesting use cases that feature our big customers, how they're leveraging the solutions, how they're leveraging the data that's being provided. So there's a vast amount of information that's available. But for existing customers, absolutely, let us know what you think. Keep that feedback going, because we can then work with that. And the teams that support our customers, be it relationship management or CAM or even customer service, they're great. They're great resources, and they're there to support that feedback loop.
Fantastic. That's really great advice. Well, it has been such a pleasure speaking to you, Isabella. Thank you so much for your time.
Same here, Kieran. Thank you for having me.